the Borough of Carteret versus Firefighters Mutual Benevolent Association. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
Not for the FM.
Go ahead, Ray.
Mr. Heineman, couldn't
for
hear
the
you.
Firefighters Mutual Benevolent Association. Your Honor, Ray Heineman of Carl Heineman.
Thank you.
Yes, good afternoon, Chief Justice. Ted Del Gershio, McManaman, Scotland, and Bauman, on behalf of the respondent, the Borough of Carteret.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Heineman, please go ahead. Let me tell everyone, we're going to stop at around 12:30. I realize we may not be able to complete the argument and may only get to hear from one advocate. Let's see how far we can go. Please go ahead. Mr. Heineman?
Justices, if it please the court, when I first arbitrated this case, to me, it seemed like a fairly simple labor arbitration. Justice, when I saw the decision, what came to mind was a quote from Steelworkers versus Warrior and Gulf Navigation. The labor arbitrator is usually chosen because of the party's confidence in her knowledge of the common law of the shop and their trust in her personal judgment to bring to bear considerations which are not expressed in the contract as criteria for judgment. The ablest judge cannot be expected to bring the same experience and competence to bear upon the determination of a grievance because he cannot be similarly informed. As I was preparing for this case last November, on November 19th, 2020, the arbitrator in this case, Susan Wood Osborne, passed away. And I immediately brought to mind, and I've been struggling since, with that provision of from Steelworkers on Warrior Gulf and Navigation. Ms. Osborne had worked for PERC as a hearing officer and mediator for some 31 years. She was an arbitrator from 2007 to 2020. She was a pillar of our labor relations and arbitration community. She taught arbitrators, she taught PERC agents. So her standing as someone that you can rely on as an arbitrator was beyond parallel. In this case, she approached the issue and came to the conclusion that, and Your Honor,
Heineman, I'm gonna respectfully recommend that you try to tell us what it is you believe the appellate division decision, what is wrong about the Aptiv decision?
Sure. Your Honor, this case, so we're clear, the arbitrator interpreted the agreement merely to conclude that the borough had violated the acting pay clause by failing to pay the lieutenants for the same exact first level supervisory duties that the shift captains had performed at the inception of the agreement. The contract language that the arbitrator found to be clear and unambiguous is, whenever a shift captain is off, the senior firefighter on duty shall assume the responsibilities of acting captain and shall receive the rate of pay of a captain for each day of such service. So the arbitrator regarded this as pretty simple. If the borough assigns duties to a lieutenant in the absence of a captain, the same duties the captain performed, the lieutenant should be paid the same amount. So the arbitrator went through pretty standard analysis, looking at the language in light of the agreement as a whole, the fact that the lieutenants were performing the same exact duties as the shift captain, that the borough over time had substituted the lower paid lieutenants to perform those same duties of those higher paid captains who, let's face it, were paid about $8,900 more. And finally, that there was no bargaining history regarding this change. So there was no agreement on waiver. All that had happened, frankly, was the borough came up with a plan to increase supervision, add a line of supervisors with a new promotional title, gave four firefighters the chance to take a promotion and get a pay raise. What could be better? What was not seen at that time was that over time, the lieutenants would become de facto captains and the captains would be eliminated. So the appellate division, I think their first error was freezing the classification structure as it existed at the time of the original agreement. The appellate division failed to realize that the lieutenants were in the bargaining unit, that the lieutenants continued after senior firefighters were promoted to the lieutenant's position, that they continued to be covered by the collective negotiations agreement. And I think that's the first source of the appellate division's problem, because they then take the acting captain's provision, which obviously there were no lieutenants at the time, and they then go on a series of formulations away from the simple fact that that language, as the arbitrator says, clearly and unambiguously provides that anybody performing the shift captain's work in a lower paid category, if they do the work, they get it. So if they assume the duties, meaning they're assigned the work, they should be paid. So,
Mr. Heineman, may I ask you one factual question? I just want that I'm
Justice
to be clear about. We know that all of the captains left, retired, or whatever. Did the borough ever remove the position of captain? Did they ever take any managerial action to say, we will no longer have captains?
No, Justice Altman. And in fact, we're dealing with that issue today. It's still in the collective bargaining agreement. It still exists. Although we know from the civil service communication that they are looking to eliminate it and are not currently filling it. But no, there's been no management action to take it away. So the appellate division found no reason for the lieutenants to be paid more because their civil service job description, among other things, says they act as captains perform in the absence of the captain. But the problem is with that analysis, the arbitrator found that the duties the lieutenants were performing were the same as those duties of the shift captain. The parties had already set the wage, the salary for those duties in 2011. And the parties decided that the responsibilities of the shift captain were worth about $9,000 more than the responsibilities of a firefighter. So when the lieutenants took the position, they were paid $1,500 more to be the second supervisor, to have less supervisory responsibility. Now that they've taken over the responsibilities, assumed the duties of the full captain, they're now taking more duties. And the party's intent was, if you take those duties, you get acting captain's pay. So that's what the answer is to the appellate division's question, why pay them more? And the relevant question is, if they're not entitled to be paid more, why did the borough back in 2011 agree that the people that performed the duties of the captain, the shift captain, paid this premium of $9,000?
Because Mr. Heineman,
has eliminated that premium.
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
It sounds as though you're arguing the case to us, and I understand why. we're here in the context of an arbitration award that should be confirmed if the award is reasonably debatable.
Yes.
Did the appellate division follow that standard in your judgment?
No, Your Honor. They did several things, I think, that departed from the standard. First, they went into great depth in looking at and trying to find backup for the chief's testimony. They even go so far as to do a discussion of the union's minutes, trying to discern something in there to back up the chief. They then look at a past practice. They agree with the arbitrator that the language is clear and unambiguous, but then they find there's no language on the lieutenants. And they don't go into the proper analysis. They don't look at the language of the contract as a whole, which is what the court said you do in cases such as Trenton PBA and New Jersey Transit. Look at the language as a whole. If you look at the language as a whole, the appellate division would have looked at the entire contract, seen that lieutenants were covered, and used that analysis in looking at Article 8, Section 5, but they departed from that. The next thing they did was they applied past practice principles, but they applied them incorrectly. The past practice here was evolving over time because initially there was no need for an acting captain because you had the lieutenants, people were doing exactly what they expected, nobody complained. But over time, that practice eroded because they were no longer substituting occasionally. Their job was not secondary or a first level supervisor taking the directions of a primary level or a secondary level supervisor. Now they were the supervisor. So that practice dissipated over time. The court seemed to think that that practice was immutable and also that it controlled the language. So those, I think, are parts of the problem that where the appellate division departed. So the arbitrator, in contrast, looked at the, found the language to be clear and unambiguous, found the ambiguity to be the insertion of the new job title in this clear language, and then looked at things like the agreement as a whole, looked at bargaining history and where the appellate division speculated about what the party's negotiations and agreement was. Instead, the arbitrator says there was no waiver. The union agreed to have its members participate, but it didn't agree to change the language. It didn't waive Article 5, Section 8, or Article 8, Section 5, directly contrary to what the chief had testified. She found that the union had not waived and that there was no bargaining history to change. Also, very important, Chief Justice, there was no ratification vote by the union to change language. The arbitrator notes, if you're going to change clear and unambiguous language in an agreement, put it in writing, go through the process. That wasn't done. There's no more questions at this time. I would like to reserve 5 minutes. I don't know if I can still do that.
We'll have you back if you'd like for a few minutes.